It's a new year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New
Yay!
Year. Happy 2015.
And as a gift to all of you listeners, we will not sing Auld Lang Syne.
No, we won't, because I don't even know. What language is that even? I'm not even certain. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. Pretty sure I have that number memorized now.
Yay!
Joining me this week, as usual, is Becky. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sam. Happy 2015.
Happy 2015. Happy 2015 and happy season 19.
Season 19.
Did you even think we'd get to season 19?
19 quarter years.
Yeah.
It's like a math problem.
Wow, it is. It's not the worst story problem in history. And also joining me is our writer, Dave Roulette. How are you?
Hello. I had such a good 2014. I feel, looking at my Facebook page, I feel like I'm an outlier on this, but I'm going to have trouble topping last year.
Well, I'm going to take a page from the Cubs and say 2014 was a building year.
Ah.
Speaking of which, everybody from the internet has asked us, it's 2015, and literally everybody, that's how it is in my notes, everybody from the internet is asking us, it's 2015, where are the hoverboards? And I'd like to say I have a better question, or a better statement. It's 2015. The Cubs are going to sweep the series. Just you watch.
I got to go with a much more obscure science fiction reference and talk about how after the 200th year of not winning a World Series, the Cubs should have been relegated to the minor leagues.
Well, for a while, some people would say that league was the minors, but that's neither here nor there nor anywhere. How about you, Becky?
I'm rooting for the Cubs. I think that it could happen. Yep, this is the year.
Well, once your team got old.
Yeah, my childhood team, Red Sox, you know, I'm done rooting for them. They're fine. You know, early 2000s, that's all I need.
They're the 21st century Yankees, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I know, as far as you're concerned.
Burn! Oh, yeah. But, no, hoverboards would be great. When did Back to the Future 2 came out? I think it was like
30 years ago. 30. Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Because they travel in 30-year increments.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's why every time I saw that stupid Facebook post with the picture of the dash of the DeLorean from 3 years ago, it's like everyone knows it's 2015 because it's 30 years from 1985. Come on, people.
Oh, like I'm good at math.
Yeah, well,
or like anybody's good at math.
30 is an easy jump.
Fair enough.
More story problems.
Speaking of bad at math, we got some really interesting actual physical mail this week, didn't we not, Becky?
We did. I did, actually. Addressed to my home address, which was Señorita Rebecca Friedman, which was amazing because I almost never get things addressed to me in Spanish.
Right.
So this actually came from Oblate or Oblate Missions. I'm not quite sure.
So Flattened Sphere Ministries?
Oblate Missions, yes. Oblate Ministries.
Oblate Spheroid?
Yeah.
And it was great. So occasionally you'll get these things in the mail. Usually I've seen it as a Jesus prayer carpet, which is weird, and if you stare long enough at Jesus with his eyes closed, it looks like Jesus opens his eyes, and it's supposed to be miraculous, and now send us $20, right? Sam, you've gotten a few of those, right?
I have like a file folder.
I think perhaps the Ask an Atheist mailbox has gotten a few of those as well.
Well that's because I signed up for a Jews for Jesus magazine.
Okay. So, well, I did not personally sign up for a Jews for Jesus magazine or a Madre Santísima de Lourdes magazine of any stripe whatsoever. But this came from San Antonio. I had to look it up. Apparently, there is a grotto that's built, that's a shrine. People make visitations to it. They pray. And it mimics Our Lady of Guadalupe and Our Lady of Lourdes, you know, Guadalupe in Mexico and Lourdes in France. But it's in San Antonio, Texas. And for the small donation,
if you have to leave Texas,
I guess.
That's a crime.
Yeah. I don't know, but for the small donation of $20, they will send you the holy water from the miraculous springs of Our Lady of Lourdes, and also you can send your petitionary prayer. But it was great because it was all in Spanish. Gave me good reason to brush up on some of my more archaic Spanish. I gotta tell you guys, I don't often read religious liturgy in Spanish, so some of these words were a little new to me.
So. Cool. Looking at this thing, I have to point out that it gives you options for the amount of money that you want to donate, but it's not 10, 15, 20, 25. It is 15, 20, 10, 25.
Speaking of bad at math.
Yeah.
Or that might be some weird psychological positioning. Speaking of giving people money, I'd like to thank Ken from Seattle, Candace from Bremerton, and Rick from Elma for all Washington State people this week meeting Peggy's Challenge, which is Peggy's Challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. And if you'd like to participate in Peggy's challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar goes to keeping the lights on and not towards creating a weird spring that you get dipped in that will somehow, you know, heal you of cancer.
But can we send you a bottle that looks like a whiteout?
That might contravene the shipping biological samples thing.
I think so. No, the picture of with our token of
air safe joke for you.
Our token of appreciation is sending a bottle of the miraculous spring water, and it looks like it's a bottle of whiteout.
And speaking of oblique air safe things, Casey Molter of Sebastian, Florida, was arrested on a criminal mischief charge after vandalizing the car of his supposedly clairvoyant girlfriend, whose dreams often offended him. Molter told deputies that he trashed the Nissan because he snapped when his spiritual girlfriend told him his dead grandmother would appear in his dreams and commit unusual sex acts involving him and an adult toy. The vandalism included a broken passenger side mirror, deflated tires, a smashed cell phone, and love notes on the hood and windshield, and other stuff I don't really want to talk about on the air.
Way to vandalize a car, dude.
That is the best religion ever.
That's your spiritual side sends you dreams that your boyfriend's dead grandmother is going to visit you.
I want to know the specifics of this guy's spirituality, I'm pretty sure, because I think it would make a really good D&D monster manual. I mean, when you get right down to it, I mean, that like weird dream monsters attack you that look like your grandmother and do unspeakable acts toward. No. That's
well, and out of all the glorious stuff to unpack in this little story, I have to point out that part of the thing is his girlfriend's dreams regularly offended him.
Yeah.
I have never been in a relationship where someone's dreams offended me. Like, how does that happen?
Maybe it's not. I just don't really talk about my dreams a lot. Then again, I'm not a clairvoyant.
Well, this is true.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There was actually two calls regarding this fight in this case. There was a domestic dispute call. And then later on, the girlfriend called back to report further damage to her car. And it looked like this is a fight between a couple. And I'm wondering, is the girlfriend actually consider herself spiritual and clairvoyant? Or is she just really mad at the gullible guy that thinks like, oh yeah, well, I've got these magic dreams and your grandma's gonna come and
this is the ultimate in passive aggressive relationships. I hate you in my dreams. maybe somebody's telling you something at that point.
Is causing that kind of trouble in your dreams, is that kind of the more grown up version of I'm not touching you? Does this bug you? Is my dreaming bugging you? I'm not touching you.
My aura thinks you're a jerk.
Yeah, well, your inner child really needs to grow up.
Is this stuff that's actually said at psychic fairs? I kind of wonder. Not the ones I went to, I'll be honest.
I do not know. But I wish Casey all the best with his, criminal mischief charge, and hopefully he'll get a less spiritual girlfriend.
Oh. Nice way of putting it.
Well, I don't imagine that they're still together after all of this.
Florida.
A
crucifix was stolen from a church in New York that was named after the patron saint of lost and stolen items. Saint Anthony of Padua Roman Catholic Church says the 5-foot-tall crucifix is worth $5,000, suggesting that crucifixes are $1,000 a foot. According to Catholic legend, Anthony used the power of prayer to make a student return a prayer book.
Oh, I love this. I want
this
that power.
This is like the most low rent. You looked into this. Apparently.
If you look back at the story of St. Anthony of Padua, I think that's it. And then, he was running an abbey and a student ran away and took a book with him. And so St. Anthony sat down and prayed and dude came back with the book. And
now he's a saint.
That's the end of the miracle.
Well, apparently he had to have told people about that miracle later on, right? Because you have to have done the miracle after you're dead.
Someone else was there too. You know, it might have been he never even prayed about it. Just guy brought back the book and someone else was walking by. He's like, huh, he must have prayed about that.
So I'm assuming this guy is a more recent saint then.
Well, I always thought that it was, Saint Anthony has lost causes as well, right?
Yes.
Well, there's. I'm
might
not,
be a different.
I always thought
Anthony.
That was a joke.
No. There is lost causes that you can pray. But here's the thing. I'm really more zoning in on Anthony that has this power, vroom, 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 to like get his students to return stolen things. Because I swear, I start out in the classroom every year with 24 pairs of scissors, and somehow we're right halfway through the year right now, and I think I've got about 16. So if I could just sit and pray or think really hard. I don't know if I have to pray to St. Anthony or if I, too, have the power of prayer to bring all of the scissors back to me.
So you could be St. Rebecca of Lord's Holy Water. And
So I looked it up, and St. Anthony of Padua lived from 1195 to 1231.
Oh, so he's not a recent one.
So he's not a recent one, but that suggests that... you know, well, I mean, there you go. The fact that the more recent a saint you get, the less cool their miraculous things that happen to them. It suggests it's an inverse exponential curve. If by, you know, year zero, of which there was none, you've got water turning into wine, walking on water, God's son on earth, and then 1,000 years later, you got returned stolen book as your so we're clearly looking at a reverse exponential curve.
Well, you know, the year of 2015, we might have a saint that made really good French toast.
Yeah,
I prayed. Really?
What?
In inverse miraculous things. It's not really miraculous making good French toast.
I don't know. French toast is really, really difficult to get right. Crunchy on the outside, soggy on the inside. You have to be the saint of culinary equipment to really land well.
Shall I say, a miracle worker?
A miracle worker, I think, is the best way to put it. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to respond to some listener feedback, which we haven't done in a while.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 bajillion in your locker.
Wow, $1 bajillion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy, just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And our first email comes to us from Mike from the internet, who writes, I'm intimately tied to Clear Channel Radio, aka iHeartMedia, and they are not anti-atheist in any way. With the billboard thing, they were trying to avoid having to replace billboards, cost overhead, as Becky said, because vandals are rarely caught. If I gave the impression, or if I even said... on the episode last week where we talked about that I thought Clear Channel is an anti-atheist organization, That was clearly a mistake. I there's no evidence for that.
Yeah, it's not a question of the organization itself. I think it's more of a question of the systemic nature of the way atheists are perceived in general American society. And what I was thinking when I read this is, you're still punishing the victim of the vandalism for it happening.
Yeah, no matter how your company feels about this, the end result is that atheists are not allowed to advertise with your company because of fears, because of illegal acts pressed upon on you and them by outside forces. So you're letting the bad guys win in that case.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, that still makes you the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, you can't take a stand on this one?
Yeah, and you know, I completely understand where they're coming from when they're like, look,
can't
we
install
just
install a camera.
We just don't want our
cameras are cheap.
Well, you know, the arson was caught on camera and the guys still weren't ever arrested. Mm, so,
well, there's ways to do that. I think there should be a better way to do this. But
since Mike from the internet is quoting me and saying, yeah, they want to reduce their cost overhead in terms of replacing vandalized billboards, I'm going to go back to what I said last week, which is then every single billboard that would feature a face would also have to be banned from Clear Channel because those things get mustachioed with spray paint so easily.
Fair point.
Well, I actually want to challenge that point a little bit now that I think about it in that.
Are you going to defend mustaches?
Let's take it out of faces. Let's keep it to controversial stuff. I don't see Chick-fil-A having trouble advertising with their cows.
Yeah.
I don't see...
Is there a history of those getting vandalized?
In some places, yeah. That has happened. I don't see Hobby Lobby. I mean, it's only when you are a member of a population of people that don't have religious privilege or any other sort of privilege that it's safe to cut you off, where it wouldn't be safe to cut off these other people.
Well, and the point I want to make is that there's a difference between someone spray painting a mustache on a billboard that eventually will come down with the rest of the billboard. When they put a new ad up, that vandalism will disappear with it.
But that doesn't change the end result, though.
It doesn't, but I just want to say that setting fire to the entire structure is more dangerous. So, like, in a sense, I'm not trying to say
that, but I'm taking it away from that mustache thing, because I think if there was a history of that, I think you might have something. Mm-hmm. But there isn't. But then... We have people putting up controversial billboards all the time.
All the time.
Right now in Alabama, is it? There's somebody.
Yeah, in
White
Harrison,
Power
Alabama.
Radio or whatever. I don't see. How did they get their ad up and we don't?
Yeah.
I mean, you were talking about that in the pre-show.
Yeah, it's a KKK radio station and they got a billboard in Alabama. And the town that it's up in is like screaming and yelling to have it torn down or taken down because they don't want to be known as the KKK town.
Yeah.
But nobody's setting fire to this, and whoever, we don't know, that one's Clear Channel, that could be a different company.
Yeah, we don't know who that is, but it doesn't,
no one ever stopped and said,
none of this matters.
You can't put this up.
The point here is, it's easy, when you're an atheist, when you're the most hated minority in America, whatever the heck that means, it's easy to throw us under the bus for the sake of economic expediency. So the problem with Clear Channel here isn't that they are anti-atheist. The problem with Clear Channel here is that they're willing to throw groups of people under the bus for economic expediency. And as far as I'm concerned, they're still the bad guys here. And you may work for them and they may disagree. You know, they may feel bad about this, but that doesn't mean I'm going to see them as on my side. When I come to them and I say, I want to do an advertisement, I do a radio show about atheism. I'm hoping to do some public advertising in the next year. And Clear Channel has a lot of advertising around here in Seattle. Am I going to be told no?
That's a good question.
I mean, this is not an issue for me, which there is no personal connection here. I mean, and just because I happen to have, and I know they do advertising for all the Christian radio stations here in town, of which there are several,
mm-hmm.
but nobody burns those down because...
Yeah.
You know, we're on the wrong side of that one.
I would be curious to know if out of the woodwork there will be other groups with other causes or other products that are being advertised that will come out of the woodwork and say, yeah, we were told that this was rejected for this location under threat of vandalism or arson. I don't know that there are, but it is not unprecedented.
Then make it good. Do something else. Make it good.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. The baseline is you're still allowing the vandals to decide to force the company to keep us out.
Yeah. You're allowed to do that, and I'm allowed to say you're a jerk because you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Yeah.
So, we have another email. This comes to us from Russ from the Internet, who writes, regarding religion in the military, I feel the gentleman on the recent episode was generally anecdotal. And this is talking to our, this is talking about our chaplain, military chaplains episode 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yes, right? At the end of November, we featured Jason Torpy from the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers.
Yeah.
And Paul Mops, a humanist activist and just general resident of this area who happened to be a Vietnam vet. And yes, we let Paul tell his story.
Assuming,
a story is an anecdote.
Assuming he's talking about Paul here. Yeah, this is an issue that we often run into with feedback we get on Ask an Atheist. And for the most part, we don't really broadcast it, but we should every once in a while just to make the point. Was Paul's story anecdotal? Given that it was a story, yes. Now, here's the thing. If you're looking for just evidence-based discussions and no stories, Ask an Atheist and perhaps media in general might not be the place for you. Maybe you should stick to studies, because we're Ask an Atheist. Our show is about humanizing atheists. It's about getting the stories of atheists out there. Stories means anecdotes. Now, if you'll note, when that segment ended, we went to a break, we came back, and then we had Jason Torpy on with data, with facts. And if you go back, those facts are there. We cite studies, we talk numbers, all of those things are there. Which may be a difference between us and a lot of soft journalism you'll get on a lot of TV news. But the fact of the matter is, the stories are important. The stories are what humanize us as atheists. They make us look like human beings. They make us look like somebody you should pay attention to. Data absent a story is just cold, hard facts and doesn't make for particularly compelling radio. And that's not what we're about.
Yeah. And the thing is that anecdotal evidence isn't evidence when it's used alone. But anecdotal evidence can put a narrative to a larger subject. We have Paul talk about his personal experience, followed by Jason talking about how putting that story into a larger context of what things are like in general in the military. And that both of those together do tell an incredibly compelling story.
Right.
I think a lot of skeptics and atheists will hew very close to what does data say. And sometimes in those cases, anecdote gets a bad rap. Anecdote does.
Yeah.
Besides humanizing atheists, as you said, Sam, anecdotes are part of observation. If you respect the scientific method, if that's what you're about, that's hugely important. An anecdote is part of the observation that spurs investigation.
Right. It's the question. It's anecdotes that fuel science in some way. You know, a story happens, especially in like sociology and psychology. You see something happens. You go, hey, is there a there? Then you basically collect anecdotes and turn them into statistics through, you know, mathematical models, through looking for data points, and then it stops being merely anecdotal evidence and becomes statistical evidence and becomes something that works for the scientific method. But if all you're looking for is just statistical evidence, if you're looking for evidence that lacks, you know, anecdotes whatsoever, you're essentially looking for evidence that lacks humanity. And when we're talking about something like the rights of people, I don't think we can safely ignore anecdotes. I don't think everything should always have the same standard of evidence when we're talking about human interaction versus, say, the efficacy of gravity or the proof of evolution. I think there may be a model here where the standards are a little bit variant.
Yeah, I think anecdotes are a good tool, but they need to be used in the right way. You can't respond to statistical analysis with an anecdote and call that counter evidence.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that anecdotal evidence isn't evidence of any sort.
Yeah, I'm not going to bring you a story of a time a nun got cancer and died and use that as evidence that God doesn't exist, because that's anecdotal and that's proving something a little bit beyond what's happening.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the story of the nun getting cancer, if there's some weird sort of gross hook in it for an atheist story, doesn't mean I'm not going to use it. It's what it comes down to.
Bringing it away from something that might be a little bit grotesque or morbid, the question of...
Why?
Because I'm Becky and I want to find happy things. The question that we ask in an episode about atheists in the military is, what are the experiences? What are the challenges facing atheists? What are the things moving forward that we can do for atheists? How can we support our soldiers and people who work for our military units who are not religious.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of support for people that are religious in the military. And with that kind of question, that question isn't answered with things other than stories.
Right. Yeah. And I do want data. Data is important to me. We generally, we like to cite studies. We like to look at evidence when we can get, when it's available. But that's not the only thing we're doing here. And that's not the only thing Ask an Atheist is about. The job of Ask an Atheist, for those of you who are atheists and listening to this show, is to humanize us, is to bring our stories to the people who wouldn't otherwise hear them. And we have to do that through anecdotes. We can't just do that through studies.
Yeah. And when you look at in the context of religion in the military, you really have to say, you know, there are elected officials in this country who say that atheists should not be allowed to serve because they are incapable of being patriotic
yeah.
or loving a country or being trustworthy. So we need to take a photograph of what life as an atheist in the military looks like.
I think one way to do that, and specifically, I can speak specifically to this one since I did a lot of writing on that episode, is with Paul and then moving on, is I was actually trying to show sort of a historical background and a historical progression through a story and then follow it up with a bunch of facts to just make the case. Like, 30 years ago, you had a lot of Catholic chaplains. It was mostly a Catholic the chaplaincy was almost a Catholic organization. Fast forward to today, through a very clear progression, it's mostly an evangelical organization, where most people entering into the military chaplaincy today are evangelicals. And the best way to really make that story for me was through anecdote.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it isn't backed by data. And mm-hmm. in fact, did we link that? We refer to the study specifically by name in the episode. Did we link it in the show notes?
I believe that we did. If we haven't, okay. You can go to askanatheist.tv and look at our back episodes, and that will be up there shortly.
So our next email comes to us from Andy from the internet, who wrote, "I got involved in a comment thread at a local atheist group that started talking about the topic of whether the city should raise the minimum wage, and it quickly slipped into a heated comment fest on what it means to be an atheist. I was honestly surprised by how many of my peers try to combine their personal beliefs and preferences with the simple actual definition of no God. The whole thing served to remind me that just because we may share one title of atheist, it doesn't mean that we don't have much else in common. Kind of made me feel like a man without a country, so to speak, again." I think we've all run into this at atheist, you know, meetups.
Oh, yeah. If there's anything you can say about us, we are opinionated people.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think I don't know if it comes through in the show, but I sort of have a reputation of being kind of a blowhard, I guess, being argumentative.
Possibly.
just a bit. not that I'm speaking from personal experience or anything. I believe the last time I was on, you said, "What's it like to be so wrong all the time?"
I have never meant that completely seriously, for the record. Just so that you know, you're supposed to see that it's funny.
Here's the thing that interests me, Andy. You said that you know, you were surprised by how many of your peers try to combine their personal beliefs and preferences with being an atheist, with atheist being a definition, no God. No, there's no God belief there. And you put peers in quotes as if the people that you are commenting with, the people that you are sharing this discussion with, aren't your peers. I think they are. I think that people that you disagree with are still your peers.
Well, the thing is I think a lot of people come to the atheism movement. I think people come to movements looking for people of a like mind. I think they're coming together looking for people who they agree with. I know that's part of the reason that brought me here, you know, all those years ago at this point. Is, you know, I'd worked on other social movements, but I very rarely found a social movement where I had something in common with a lot of the people. And then I came to atheism, and I was like, maybe that would be the case. As it turns out, no.
Yeah.
But atheism, you know, the religious freedom and stuff like that still is incredibly meaningful to me, so I stuck with it. And just because, you know, we don't believe in God doesn't mean that we have a lot of things in common. And that extends to, you know, the Ask an Atheist show. And then sort of a conundrum that I'm having with the show right now is we try to keep Ask an Atheist specifically about a show about atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state is, mm-hmm. you know, we try to talk about those things where politics and the world and news and opinions specifically intersect with those things, because a lot of people see atheists as primarily a liberal group of people because, you know, not believing in religion is considered a liberal idea. But then, from the American political standard, you have a huge population of people who are libertarians and atheists, and they might not like that whole liberal thing. And so we try to speak for all of these people. But then other stuff comes into play where on the show, primarily because of me, because I am a humanist and I find myself talking about humanism more, humanism stuff starts creeping in more and more and more into the show. And when it does that, I think sometimes, you know, if you read the Humanist Manifesto, I think sometimes humanism has political things, has a political thing to say where mere atheism might not.
Right.
And how do I talk about that in a way that still provides a, you know, still provides a view into the wide, the breadth of the atheist experience, if I may reference a show in Austin. You know, how do I do that and still talk about humanism, because it is important to me, and I think it wouldn't be the same show if I didn't talk about it.
Yeah, and it's something I've noticed over time is that very often people's political ideology is informed by what side they're on.
Right.
I am on the left, therefore I'm supposed to believe in this, this, and this. I'm on the right, I'm supposed to believe this, this, and this. And atheism doesn't fit into that, because being atheist shouldn't serve your belief structure, and also it should encourage you to be skeptical of where you're standing, so you don't ever stop thinking at, well, the left believes this, so this must be right, or the right believes this, so this must be right.
Yeah, and I think it goes a little bit farther on that in the political spectrum, as we talk about skepticism a lot on the show. And in terms of scientific skepticism and belief in the scientific process, as far as I'm concerned, there isn't anywhere in the United States political spectrum where there is a strong pro-science effort.
Right.
I mean, on all sides, you have, you know, either religious wackadoodleism or I'm against the man wackadoodleism. And at some point, you just get these, you know, the anti-GMO types on the left and the, you know, God is not going to burn or is going to end the world by fire and not by flood on the other side. And it's all of, but then there's a mix all over the place. I haven't found a political place in the United States that is pro-science and actually looks and speaks directly to scientific evidence.
And evidence-based.
And specifically evidence-based thinking.
Right.
So it's difficult to have a particular political stance. Now, I have tons of them. Don't get me wrong. If you see me on Facebook, on Ask an Atheist stuff, I tend to keep it specifically on atheism stuff, like with the Ferguson thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the day that the Ferguson verdict was handed down, I basically said thank you and good night to Twitter and then focused on my own personal stuff. So if you want to know what my personal ideas are, I will not hide them from you. But sometimes I just don't think Ask an Atheist is the proper venue for them. More and more, like, people who know me are saying, hey, how about you talk about politics on the show? You have really interesting political, you know, ideas, and I think you should start talking about them. And I'm like, oh, boy, another political talk show on AM radio. How many of these do we have and how many do we need?
But back to Andy's question, in terms of looking at it from a common thread in an online group, or maybe the online common thread of an in-person group, that might be a good place for it. Every group sets up their own norms and their own expectations for what valid discussion points are. Some say, we're only here to talk about atheism or religion. And some say, hey, yeah, we're a group of atheists, but we happen to believe lots of different things. And so any kinds of discussions.
Yeah, I like groups where you're allowed to have conversations that can be argumentative, but not an argument. You know, I think that's good. And as I was saying before, the scientific process is basically knowledge via conflict. You know, you get ideas and then you bang them together really hard until they both crumple, or a new idea shoots out of it like some sort of subatomic particle, and then knowledge is created. So I kind of like those arguments, but that's not for everybody.
I think that in a sense it's not for everybody, especially those who will gravitate towards atheist groups, specifically because many atheists and humanists feel very alienated so often. And so it can be surprising, perhaps, to maybe get together with atheists and then yet again feel alienated. I think that might be what Andy was talking about when he said it kind of made him feel like a man without a country.
Yeah. Oh,
and I have been there before.
I think we all have.
I remember when I think specifically, we've had conversations about this. Atheism is an anti-sports thing, and I'm a big sports guy.
Yeah. And so at some point, I decided that I actually made an effort to talk more about sports. And I'm discovering that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of atheists out there who like sports, and they just, a lot of them don't feel like they have a chance to talk about it. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with listener feedback.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Maggie used to say, man, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up. And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer. And now it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Olvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I should probably mention that thing because I keep forgetting that we've changed the name. Well, speaking of which, like we were talking about in the last segment, you know, I try to keep the politics that don't have to do with specifically about atheism. But then again, sometimes I think the humanism creeps in and sometimes I feel like there's a necessity to make an opinion on that. And honestly, this is one that I could use some guidance on. And this is one where I am, you know, I try to take this opinion all the time. But this specifically, this one, I'm not the expert. Mm-hmm. You guys are the experts. Please give me data. So you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the red shiny candy like button. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv and let me know what you think. And I would very much like to hear your opinion because I like your opinions most of the time.
We like you people.
Our next email comes to us from Michelle from the internet, who writes, "My Mormon father-in-law moved in with us in October due to health issues. He tries to save me every now and then, but dismisses any evidence that I bring to the table. This usually results in a couple days of us not talking. Do you even think it's possible to convince most people that there is no God? I find it's best to avoid conversing with the religious when it comes to science or religion."
I like this one, but Michelle, here's the thing. Just because your father-in-law is trying to save you doesn't mean that there's only two responses. It doesn't mean that you can just avoid conversing or you have to sit there convincing him that there is no God. I mean, there's probably more things that you can do than just try to go head to head, toe to toe with him and say, this is why I don't believe in God and there is no God and you should believe that way too.
I have had the conversation with people, though, where they're only interested in converting you or being mad at you, and there is no middle ground. To have a much wider field of conversation, I think requires the consent of both parties involved in the conversation. And if this is the guy, if this guy is only interested in converting you for the sake of his children or for his grandchildren or whatever, it's going to be very difficult to talk about the potatoes and how you're cooking them this week if all that person is interested in is a conversation about you converting to their religion. I think you got a point there, but it requires both parties.
Well, and I would ask if you've ever actually tried to preface the conversation by setting some ground rules. If he walks up to you trying to save you and say, all right, look, I'm willing to talk to you about this, but you need to listen to me.
Yeah.
This can't be a one-way conversation. Are you willing to listen to what I have to say and actually think about it? Because if you're not, we're going to stop here because this is my house and I need to live comfortably here. You know, don't be afraid to set boundaries in the conversation or boundaries on the relationship.
I would agree to that. I think that if your father-in-law is open to conversing and really hearing, maybe you can say, I understand that, or what I think I understand is that your concern for me is what's leading you to do this. But here's the thing. This is why you might not need to be concerned for me. This is why I feel the way I do or why I believe the way I do. And instead of focusing on whether there's a God or not, you can focus on helping your father-in-law understand that someone who doesn't believe in God or doesn't believe in the Mormon God can still be a good person, can still raise good children, can still be a good spouse to your father-in-law's child.
And then you had an argument that you made or in the pre-show, which I'm loath to bring up just to knock down, but I think it's worth talking about.
It's Michelle. What does your spouse think in this case?
Yeah. And my opinion on that is if your in-laws are running roughshod over you, it's likely because they felt free to run roughshod over your spouse. And so you might not find a lot of strength there. But the other side of that is maybe this could be the impetus to provide a united front. Like maybe the fact that it's not just them anymore and is now you provide you with the opportunity to basically create that united front.
We also don't know if Michelle's spouse is Mormon or not.
Should it matter?
I think it shouldn't. And I mean, it would be interesting either way. Either, you know, your spouse doesn't believe either, and maybe he or she has just decided to not converse on this subject. Maybe you two have reached a detente that you respect each other's beliefs and you're married to each other. And that could be a really good force for trying to help your father-in-law understand you.
Well, and I think it's a very touchy situation where you never want to put your spouse in a situation where they have to choose between you or your parents, because that puts them in a really uncomfortable place. And that's just going to increase the tension that is clearly growing in this household, which is the last thing you want to do.
Well, I think providing a united front could actually clean up, you know, kind of clear things up in the household, if not necessarily your relationship with your in-laws. Because on one hand, if you're both atheists, that provides a very clear common front.
Right.
But if you're not both atheists, then clearly you have some sort of detente in your relationship, or you have some sort of understanding in the context of the relationship that allows your marriage to exist and be successful that your in-laws are not respecting. And so I think either way, if you make the point that, you know, how your parents treat you is one thing, but then when that relationship starts being not about just you anymore and starts including other people, then I think the opportunity for providing that united front, even if it wasn't there before, I think that might provide the opening moves to build that sort of relationship where if the father-in-law is bound and determined to make the conversation about you converting, then your father-in-law has made this an us versus them argument. They
right.
have made it a zero-sum game.
A black and white dichotomy.
And it's time to accept those rules and act accordingly, to the point where my jerky, usual, Sam is not a very nice guy answer is, well, usually what these conversations happen, when you have these periods of silence over this one subject, those periods of silence tend to get longer and longer and longer as the conversation persists. So keep on this path, and eventually the period between conversations will exceed the length of your life, and you'll be safe.
And on that cheery, cheery to start the new year, Sam.
Hey, I'm a realist, which is short for jerk. Or long for jerk. Yeah, so our next email comes to us from Liz from California, who writes, do you think there is a multiverse? What would the other universes be like? I don't really have a good answer for this one, but it's interesting. Becky, what do you think?
I actually got this question from some of my students recently, and I had a really good answer for, do you think that there's life outside of Earth? But I didn't have a good answer for, do you think there's multiple universes or parallel universes? And we prefaced all of these questions, and this was in a science class that I was teaching and facilitating with, we prefaced the questions with, these are beliefs. We understand that there's not evidence to support these beliefs, but I really have no idea. I really don't know. There's not something that would compel me to think that there's multiple universes or not multiple universes. And I certainly don't believe as such. So I'm agnostic on the issue and really don't feel secure in making an opinion about what I think or hope.
I'm going to walk the fine line of the policy on the show about politics and just kind of dip my toe in here and say, I'm going to say the line that a lot of conservatives say, which is, I'm not a scientist. I'm going to follow that line with what they should say, which is, the scientists say the math works out. I don't know, but they say, yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I really feel like school's still out on this one.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting to bring it to a side conversation that you're talking about. This is a thing that a lot of religious people say is, do you believe in aliens? Or then if you believe in aliens, then why don't you believe in God? And it's like, well, there's not evidence for the existence of aliens. So I remain agnostic on the existence of aliens. There isn't proof for or against. But the fact of the matter is we have, we live in this one tiny part of this universe. And to make the Carl Sagan argument, that's an awful lot of space. So it seems likely that there might be life outside of Earth. I mean, it seems more likely than unlikely that life would arise in other places, especially as we keep, advancing scientifically and we find extremophiles pretty much everywhere on Earth we look. And it just looks like life isn't as hard as we thought it was, in which case there's life, might be life all over the place, which then brings up the Drake equation and we have a whole nother ball of wax.
That was how I addressed the life question with my students. I said, I don't have evidence to say yes or no, but I think, I was with you, Sam, I think it's more likely than not. I also said, hey, in the last 2 decades, the number of rocky Earth-like planets that we've discovered orbiting different stars, it's a really cool prospect for me. We haven't really, as far as I understand, discovered things that would suggest alternate universes. I still don't quite wrap my head around whether this is a testable question or not. I've read certain articles referring to hypotheses about how to test whether there's parallel universes or whether we are a computer simulation inside some other universe and things like that. What would we see evidence for? And my understanding is out right now. So I'm kind of with Dave on that.
Yeah. So we have this sort of mamby-pamby, not very good answer. We go, well, we don't know.
Put it this way, if there are multiverses, I hope there's one where ALF is actually a real thing.
Can I tell you something a little weird about myself?
You're going to follow up with me saying ALF, I hope ALF is a real thing with, let me tell you something weird about myself?
Yes.
Okay.
I have an inbuilt protocol for what happens if I meet myself.
Okay.
About limiting communication and not hanging out and not doing weird things.
So this is like the Doc Brown and Back to the Future tells Marty with your actual self.
Yeah. What happens if I approach a closed time like loop, or I meet myself in a parallel universe who's very much like myself, or eventually the whole transhumanism thing picks up and, I start being able to make copies of myself. I have a protocol for what happens if I meet myself. And it's mostly a protocol of not communicating because I don't want to embarrass myself.
To put that in plain English, if you ever meet yourself from a different timeline or a different universe, your response will be, talk to the hand.
No, I have a very limited things about what I'm willing to communicate and what I'm not. Specifically, what types of information. And it's weird, I know, but I'm just so terrified of embarrassing myself, I guess.
Interesting.
You're not terrified of disrupting all of space and time and all of that.
No. The one thing
it's shame that shields you.
The one thing that makes life livable for me is that I don't have to look at myself. And if different universes exist and I can meet myself, that one constant is then removed. So what I have to do is mitigate that constant, or the lack of that constant, to make my existence survivable.
We do have very small mirrors in this house.
Yeah. Like I said, can I tell you something weird about myself? Well, and that's been Sam's Weird Thing Corner.
And as I think about this, I think, like, I feel like I would have the opposite effect. I would not be afraid of embarrassing myself, because there is somebody who actually can fully empathize with my most horrifyingly embarrassing moments of my life.
And if you empathize, then you doubly feel the embarrassment.
See, I already judge myself fairly harshly for the most embarrassing portions of my life, so I don't need two people judging myself that harshly. That just makes it worse. Ask an atheist, 844 skeptic. 844. Yeah, like I said, it's a weird thing. It's the weird things you think when you're really into science fiction, I suppose.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody else out there has any weird rules like that they don't share with other people.
Well, I've had an idea of what I would do if I could travel back in time.
What would you do?
I would establish a religion whose sole purpose was the collection and preservation of information. Anything that's written down should be collected, stored, copied.
We do have that, actually, in Scandinavia. It's copyism, and it's built on file sharing. And part of it was, I believe, started as a joke to undermine the laws around file sharing and copyright laws. So if it's a religion, then it's a protected act to actually share, copy, trade all of that information.
Well, and I'm not looking for a legal loophole.
Right. You actually want that.
Yeah.
And speaking of, Moscow State University in Russia has announced plans to construct a massive DNA storage facility that would house genetic material for every known living and extinct organism for whom DNA samples are available. The university was awarded a grant equivalent to about $18 million and will cover 166 square miles. The project, dubbed Noah's Ark, of course, would be more comprehensive than Britain's Frozen Ark, which specializes in DNA of endangered species, and the Museum of Natural History in Washington, which holds more than 4.2 million genetic samples. So with 2 minutes left, you might be getting there, especially since it's Russia, and Russia seems to be kind of kooky these days when it comes to religion.
And of course, they have to call it Noah's Ark, and of course, the religious groups all writing about it are like, oh, this is so great, it's Noah's Ark.
It is a kind of an amazing thing. Charisma and Christianity Today is all talking about Russia is building a new Noah's Ark. And clearly, someone's going to click on that and all of a sudden read all about the preservation of genetic codes, which would presumably allow people at some point in the future to engineer these things, something that I would assume would be very anti-religious or really not very kosher, so
to speak. Well, if God's going to kill the world in fire, most of these genetic samples are going to burn anyway, so it doesn't matter.
All righty.
I'm proposing an alternative name for this.
Okay.
Titan AE.
Oh, not Planet Bob?
Not Planet Bob. Although I like Planet Bob, if you will, I am never calling it that.
That was a pretty good movie. I
enjoyed it.
Yeah. I want a Shetland mammoth. I want someone to breathe.
Isn't that just
a
an
Shetland
elephant?
Mammoth. No, it's
no, I'm assuming
teeny
a mammoth is bigger than
mammoth.
An elephant because of its name. Right. Okay, a Shetland mammoth.
Yes, a little service animal that's a woolly, woolly, teeny little elephant.
You're cleaning up after it.
Okay. Fair.
Or do you get a yap dog that's the size of a three-story building?
That was Clifford.
That was the go. Oh, yeah, Clifford.
Clifford,
the
big red dog.
Incredibly annoying dog.
Yes.
Oh, man. So Titan AE, a genetic library of all things so that we can go play Civilization After Earth or...
Well, and when going back to my point about starting a religion about protecting information. Can you imagine if we had original copies of biblical texts, of the Torah, of, these things that we think we know what they originally meant, but we are about five generations of copies removed from the originals, so we can't quite be sure?
I think we're going to have to leave it there.
Interesting prospects.
This is Ask an Atheist. You can leave us an email at questions@askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam. With me today was Rebecca Friedman and Dave Brulette. We were the writers. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield, Steve Siemens. It's 2019. It's 2015, season 19. A lot of stuff going on. Talk to you guys next week. I think maybe midnight's too late to record.